When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to From Complex to Queens. I am not your usual host, Steve Saipa. I am Lucas Vlahos. Today I'm joined by Ken Lavin and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing?
We're good, I think. I'm good.
Yeah, I'm good. Chilling.
Oh, we miss you, Steve. Doing this is hard. Do you think it's such an easy job when you listen in, and then the second you hit record and start the podcast, you just forget how to speak? It's amazing. Anyway... the one benefit of Steve not being here is that I can once again subject you guys and the listeners to video game related promote extend trade. So on that note, we're going to do promote extend trade BioWare RPGs. And there are three main franchises in that vein. First one being Mass Effect, second being Dragon Age, and third being Knights of the Old Republic. And if you want to extend Knights of the Old Republic to include the MMO, that's fine too. I think we all know what my answer to this is, so I'll let you guys go first.
It's hard because I don't want to trade any of the three. Like, I think I think Dragon Age is the worst, like, because 2 was kind of bad and like Inquisition was up and down, so I'm trading that one, but I still like the series, you know? Like, it's still a series I played a lot of and I really enjoyed. It's just I'm probably promoting Mass Effect and extending KOTOR because I never played the MMO, which I probably should, but so just that, not having that knowledge, and also Mass Effect's so good. So
Ken,
I'm going to defer to the group. I'm not really a video game person. I don't think I've played any of these games.
Ken, you make so sad.
Yeah.
It's fine. That's usually my answer when we do rest of the few
this,
times.
This is wrestling.
Yes, yes. We do know that Steve's answer is KOTOR above all else. Not exactly surprising given his status as an old school Star Wars dude. And to the surprise of no one, Mass Effect is far and away the best answer here for me.
And I do love Legendary Edition, right?
Yes. Oh my God. It's like taken over my life the past week and a half or so. I'm getting up to the suicide mission on 2 now.
Oh man. Ugh,
it's so good. They are, of course, remaking KOTOR in the next couple years, so that'll be fun, too. I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, yes, me too.
Regarding Dragon Age, though, like, Dragon Age is certainly not bad. I won't disagree with your assessment there. I just feel like there are... It doesn't feel like there are other good space RPGs to the level of Mass Effect.
Yeah.
But there are several good fantasy-themed RPGs, whether that's...
I agree with that.
The Witcher, Skyrim, I mean, it's a different flavor, but there are other... It's not as much of a standout to me, I guess.
There's other ways to get that, to scratch that itch.
Right.
I haven't found a game yet that scratches the itch like Mass Effect does.
Exactly.
Like, that level of detail and everything. I just, I haven't been able to.
That was kind of what Bethesda was, not really, because even the Outer Worlds was still not quite the same, but yeah.
That was closer to Fallout for me.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, it was space Fallout.
Yeah, I really liked it. Like, I had a lot of fun with it for what it was. But, like, it wasn't, like, the game of the year or anything. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed my time with it quite a lot. But I think that's going to be a game where the sequel comes out, and I'm like, oh, this is way better than the first one. Because they figured out how to, like, really take the next steps forward.
Right, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Because I thought the first one was good but flawed. So.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, now that I've gotten my... video game agenda filled for the podcast, we'll move on to the actual baseball related agenda. So if you tuned out for the last 5 minutes, sorry, welcome back. So we'll start by going over the AFL stats from the last week, which is to say all the AFL games so far. The Mets sent a small pool of guys, Brett Beatty, Carlos Cortez, Hayden Sanger, a couple pitchers, Garrison Bryant, Brian Metoyer, and Colin Holderman. I'll do the pitchers first because they're less interesting. Garrison Bryant threw two innings, struck out two, walked one, allowed one run. Brian Matur tossed one inning, struck out one, walked one, allowed a run. And Colin Holderman tossed one inning, struck out one, walked none, didn't allow a run. I think we've discussed this a couple times leading up to the AFL or at various points over the history of this podcast about how pitching in the AFL is largely meaningless.
Yeah, it's a, they just played a whole season, and also it's on the surface of Mars. So, like, I don't really care, almost. Like, just don't get absolutely destroyed every time out, and you're good.
Yeah, I mean, and as we all know at this point, it's not even just that the balls fly forever, it's that they move differently in this sort of environment. So, mm-hmm. Assessing anything is going to be hard. I do find it a little odd that they sent a couple guys that are Rule 5 eligible. Perhaps that's an indication that they don't care if they get picked, but at the same time, as we'll discuss later, Brian Metoyer is probably someone they should care about a little bit.
I mean, I'd add him. I'm a fan of his.
Yeah, we'll get to Metoyer in a bit, yeah. For sure. Yeah, but it's interesting that they'd send him to a showcase league. If they were trying to sneak him through. On to the hitters, which is definitely the more interesting pool. Let's get Hayden Sanger out of the way first. He hasn't been playing a ton because, I mean, he's definitely a semi-interesting prospect in his own right, but one of the best catching prospects in baseball is on the same AFL team in Marco Feliciano. So Sanger's been mostly the backup. He's hitting 200 with a 553 OPS. I think I can read my own handwriting. The two guys who have been playing more, Carlos Cortez and Brett Beatty. Cortez is hitting 429 with a 1270 OPS with no extra base hits, assuming I collated the box scores correctly. And Brett Beatty is, you know, just doing his thing, hitting 500 with a OPS of almost 1500. He's got a triple and two doubles, a whole bunch of singles. He posted some very impressive exit velos off Mackenzie Gore, who is definitely not the prospect he once was, but it's fun to talk about. Brett Beatty, good at hitting.
He's too good for that league.
Can confirm.
Now, I will raise one issue that I've seen a couple of the, you know, professional Twitter prospect guys point out. He's been hitting a lot of ground balls in the AFL. I think there was even a comment he made about not being particularly concerned about his ground ball rate, and I think he's hit more ground balls in the minors than you'd like. Given those stats and what seems to be a I don't want to imply that he's lazy or anything, but like a disinterest in changing that approach, does that concern you at all when we're talking about a guy who we're imagining is going to be a power threat down the line if he's still hitting too many ground balls and isn't inclined to change that?
I don't know how often even the I know the launch angle stuff still exists, but there's still a lot of guys who don't care, you know, and they just hit the ball. Like, and also he doesn't have to be like that in order to be good. Like, he's going to hit his home runs. As long as he's making solid contact right now, just let him rock, you know? Like, asking a 20-year-old kid about his ground ball rate, he's going to be like, I don't care, you know? It's just how kids are.
Yeah.
Like, if the performance wasn't there, maybe, but...
Yeah, exactly.
He's literally all he's done is hit, so...
And, like, he slugged a bunch in the minors, too. It's not like he did hit the ball.
Especially with powers. Like, I care way less about things like that than I do, like, strikeout rate.
That's certainly a fair point. Absolutely.
I think I'd be more worried if he was, like, jank mangaming the baseball than, like, just not hitting for any power at all, you know?
I mean, the weird thing that he is that he almost has a mangum light approach, right? Like, he hits a decent amount of ground balls and goes to the opposite field. It's just when he goes to the opposite field, it carries for 450 feet,
and that's a good thing, you know what I mean? So that's fine. So like,
I mean, I think at some point down the line there may be a reckoning is too dire a term. I think there's going to need to be an adjustment at some point, but that's not something I'm like panicking about.
Anyway. I know exactly. I think this is a problem when he gets to the majors and he gets more hopefully if the Mets are still getting better analytically by then, he gets a more focused approach.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is are we worried that this might be a situation of a guy who clearly has a lot of natural talent and performs in the minors, but then gets to the majors and doesn't quite click right away. And really, we've seen some major league teams succeed at fixing that situation, and others, much like the Mets, failing miserably.
Yeah, the Mets are a mixed bag with it. Like, they completely made Alonso swing new, and he's one of the best power hitters in the league. And then they made Andrés Giménez try to do the same thing. and like, why don't do that, you know? But like,
that was a mistake.
And Rosario never really popped.
It seems like, at least in recent history, they've had more success changing things wholesale in the minors, as opposed to making tweaks once a guy hits the majors, right? Like, maybe you talk about, I mean, Alonso's definitely a success story, but they fixed him in the minors.
Oh, yeah. They changed some stuff when he was from Florida to Brooklyn. Like,
right. Whereas a guy like maybe Ahmed Rosario or something, they never seem to make any real adjustments at the majors. We're like, you're up here in the big leagues, figure it out.
Yeah. I also think you have to read the room on the prospect. Like, if you see a guy who looks like Andrés Giménez, you don't try to make him a power hitter. You know, like,
don't make a 6-foot, 150-pound middle infielder stomp and lift. That's a bold idea.
Yeah, like, it sounds like very obvious, but also teams don't do it's the same thing like with the Sonny Gray stuff with the Yankees. I think about that a lot, when he was terrible because they made him throw his worst pitch, and he was like, but I don't throw a good slider or whatever. I think it was a slider, and they were like, nah, but we throw sliders. But he was like, mine's bad. And like, that uniformity is a bad thing, you know? Like, you need to also know what your players are good and bad at, and the Mets need to see as Beatty progresses, because he's still, this is his first full season, like, we don't have to make sweeping declarations either way. It's not like he's knocking on the door next year. Like, he still needs some time.
And there's a world where he is knocking. I mean, there's a world where he does knock down the door next year, and I hope we live in that world. But
I'm saying, as we sit here today, I'm not penciling him in to play next year on the Mets.
No. It's other things. Should not stand in the way of the Mets signing Chris Bryant.
Yes, because, again, you could do other things with those players, of course. It's things either went amazingly or horribly if he's in the majors next year.
Knowing the Mets.
Yeah.
Which one of those is more likely?
I just want to say, like, I'm looking at the leaderboard for ground ball percentage in the big leagues this year. Some pretty good names are around that round, that range. Like Juan Soto grounded, hit the ball on the ground like 53% of the time.
Really? Okay, that's surprising. That's surprising. To me, honestly.
Starling Marte's up there, 54.8.
Yeah.
Tim Anderson makes sense.
Yeah, Tim Anderson makes sense.
Anderson like and Marte Bichette's definitely both there. Make sense.
Bichette being up there is surprising. Alex, I feel like all he does is hit levels.
He's at almost exactly 50%. Yeah, so like, it just has to work. I don't know.
No, I mean,
I'm not worried about it.
Look, if Juan Soto, on the one hand, if Juan Soto does it, how bad could it be? On the other hand,
it's Juan Soto.
Trying to be Juan Soto is probably not a good idea for most prospects.
Could you imagine you walk into your prospect camp and they're like,
everyone's so dancing in the box.
Yeah, everyone, you're going to be a Juan Soto type player. Like, no, everyone. I'm sorry.
See that guy? You're going to be him.
Just do Juan Soto things. Just swing at. Just
have, be Juan Soto. It's not that hard.
Someone hire Ken to be a director of player development. I think someone had a post up on like the baseball hiring website. I think it might be the Orioles.
Yeah, I think it was
the Orioles. The Reds. For like director of player development, hire Ken. He's got great ideas.
Yeah, be like Juan Soto.
Just be Juan one. Soto.
Not like Juan Soto. Be Juan Soto.
I mean, but the best thing about Juan Soto, and weirdly, to loop this back, I think this is a skill that Beatty has or will have to an extent, not the extent Juan Soto has.
Of course, yeah.
But that wonderful graph of fastballs on the edge, upper edge of the zone, where he has like 100% correct rate in terms of swing versus non-swing, just doesn't swing at anything special. That's even slightly out of the strike zone.
It's just, I don't know how anyone does that. Like, even dudes like Nimmo, who aren't obviously the hitters, Juan Soto is like, that's a ball wise, but the eye stuff, like, I don't know how you do that with the level, how fast pitchers are.
Yeah.
Like, Soto takes some pitches, and I'm just like, no way. No way he did that on purpose, but he did.
The same thing with, like, Joey Votto and Brandon Nimmo. It's like, what are you seeing that made you say, nah?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Call it Moneyball syndrome, but I have a sucker for I'm a sucker for those kind of guys.
Oh, we have breaking news about the minor leagues, by the way.
Okay, go ahead. Because
it's Passan, right, or Passan? Jeff Passan.
I always thought Passan. It was Passan, but
me too. But anyway, you know who he is. Breaking: Major League Baseball teams will provide housing for minor league baseball players starting in 2022.
Wow.
Yep. Oh.
That's huge.
Yep.
Very nice.
Well, then, that's good, because I didn't want to talk more about Carlos Cortez anyway. Cortez, if I didn't say it already, is hitting .429, .1270, has no extra base hits. He's played two games. Moving on. That's absolutely incredible.
In mid-September, according to lead sources, owners from the league's 30 teams agreed unanimously to a plan that would provide housing for minor league players. Whether they will offer stipends that will recover housing or provide the lodging itself is not yet decided. But, like, it's housing for minor leaguers.
Yeah, I don't. To me, it's always made more sense to almost have, like, a dormitory system.
Yeah, the Royals do that for one of their minor league teams. They were building, like, a hotel with, like, a big Royals logo on.
I mean, makes sense.
No, like, couldn't you just, like, buy a Best Western or something?
Yeah, just and
put your branding all over it.
And then it's like, oh, that's where the Mets live. Like, cool, you know?
Yep. And then maybe give guys an option to opt out of it if they're older and want a stipend to live on their own or something.
Yeah, I'm sure like some 30-year-old who's in Syracuse doesn't want to live at the hotel because if they're a former major leaguer, they have the money to do so. But you could still give them a stipend anyway because being nice about it. But
like the details, I mean, we could sweat. Over. I'm sure there'll be minor details to criticize in this, and I'd like to see the whole story about how much they're actually providing in terms of stipends, but. No, definitely good news and something that's beyond overdue.
For sure.
Not something I think any of us expected to see either.
No, I expected this to be the opposite, and the owner's fighting against it because they just cheap.
Oh, man. I guess Steve looked into it and then yelled at all the other owners or something like that. Let's No, that did not happen.
That decidedly did not happen, but yeah,
that definitely did not happen.
It is nice that all 30 teams just decided to do this. Like, I know it's very late here and like I'm not going to like pat them on the back for making a decision they should have done years ago, but
yeah, the obvious choice.
Yeah, but it's still nice to see like no one was like the Mets owner was like, no, Steve Cohen said, no, I hate this, but everyone said yes, so I have to do it. Like everyone just kind of agreed that the grift has been exposed and it's time. Basically.
We've gone over the math several times. Larger outlets have covered such math in more detail. It's a laughably small amount of money for major league teams.
Yeah. It's like one player.
Yeah.
Like
it's less than Alejandro Diaz's money.
Yeah. One metric Alejandro Diaz.
The Mets could do the adding depth tweet, but it's the whole minor leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. Now we've also talked about all the other services, educational services, language, financial, etc. that should be provided, and I certainly hope that the various organizations and people who have been vocal about this continue pushing. I mean, shout out what is that? What great Twitter account? The Minor League Advocates Twitter.
Advocates for Minor. They're mentioned in the article.
That's absolutely. That's. I mean, that's they did incredible work. They deserve a lot of credit. And we should also give credit to the small handful of major leaguers who maybe not vocally stood up and said something, but at least lent their support. Right, like Andrew McCutchen putting on the Live Strong bracelet or whatever the hell it was.
Oh, it was like a fair play or something like that. Fair ball or something. Yeah.
And Luis Rojas for giving an honest answer in a press conference about this in a spot where I'm sure many managers might have taken the easier road out and said, not my purview, not my place to comment on that. And
or we did it, so do you. Like, I think Adam Eaton said something to that effect.
Oh, my God.
He was kind of like, well, I did it, and that's what happens. And it's like, well, that's not what it should be. Like,
Adam Eaton, man.
Not very surprising.
Retire.
But he was on the White Sox this year, right?
And then on the Angels. They cut him, like, midway through the season. The White Sox, he was terrible in Chicago, and they cut him.
Let's see how bad terrible was. Ooh, boy, you're not kidding.
Yeah. It was real bad. They tried to make him like their number two hitter for months, and he was just like horrible.
Oh. The Tony La Russa experience.
Mm-hmm. It was extremely. It's extremely. This guy's a two hitter, and it's like for no reason at all. Like there's no, and he hit like 100.
Adam Eaton hit 201, 282, 327 on the season for seven. Yeah. That's a 70 weighted negative .3 WAR in half a season.
That's wild.
That's real bad. So anyway, glad we got some breaking news because this is definitely a light time of the year for minor league content.
Yeah, there's not much until the season's over and we could start like talking. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, this is welcome news, and I'm sure we'll have a deeper discussion in the coming weeks once we've gotten more details and had some time to digest.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Okay, and now let's move on to our all-organization team. I know last week we talked about the actual all-stars from the Mets system in terms of their respective leagues. But now, because we like pulling our hair out and staring way too long at rosters in a very depleted farm, we decided to put together our all-organizational teams. So we have a first team and a second team. I'll read through all the names first, and then we'll talk about some of them. First team, definitely some obvious candidates here. Catcher, Francisco Alvarez. First base, Mark Vientos. I know that's cheating a little bit. Deal with it.
I'll give it to him.
Second base, Jose Peraza. Third base, Brett Beatty. Shortstop, Ronnie Mauricio. Outfield, Carlos Cortez, Khalil Lee, and Jake Mangum. Starting pitcher, Tyler McGill. And relief pitcher, Eric Orzi. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Second team, catcher Hayden Sanger. First baseman, David Thompson. Yes, that was the best option. Second baseman, Luke Ritter. Third baseman, Jalen Palmer. Shortstop, Kevin Kendall. outfielder Alex Ramirez, outfielder Mason Williams, and then finally Mark Payton in the outfield, starting pitcher JT Ginn, and relief pitcher Brian Metoyer. So I think we've discussed Beatty, Alvarez, Mauricio, even Cortez to death at this point. And Vientos, of course. So we should talk a little bit about some of these other names. Jose Peroza is first up here. I think he's had maybe the most, outside of the top guys, he improved his stock the most among the Mets farmhands this year.
Mm-hmm.
Started the year in St. Lucie, where he hit, I had this up earlier, here it is, 274, 404, 442, with a 14% walks, 24% strikeouts. That's a 136 weighted. Then moved up to Brooklyn. Didn't hit quite as well there in 40 games, 218, 293, 383, but that was his first real taste of the level, and it was interesting enough to be a prospect of note in a rather thin system.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You guys have any strong thoughts on Jose Peroza? I'm just glad that Jose Peraza will no longer be in the system next year. Or presumably will not be in the system next year. I also know that
Peroza... I also like that they're complete opposites. Like,
yes.
They don't look alike. They don't play alike. There's nothing really similar to each other outside of their name, and it's hysterical to me.
it's extremely it's not even like Jose Peraza is old and Peraza's young. Peraza's only like what, 26 or something?
Yeah, something like that. He's sneaky young, where I thought he was like 32 when the Mets signed him.
Yep.
He feels like someone who's been around forever, but he was only on the Reds for a little bit and only started that like one season.
But, he is 27.
Yeah.
So Peraza's interesting guy. I know I listed him as a second baseman here. Again, I'm stretching things a bit. He played almost entirely third base this season. Short, stocky, I think is the best way to put it.
Yes, he is.
Has some pop, has some...
He has a good eye.
Yeah, he has a good eye. Didn't display great bat-to-ball skills in Brooklyn, but I'm somewhat willing to give him a pass after basically not seeing... Like, he got 33 games of low A in 2019, but that's a very small taste of... full season ball, and then after a whole 2020 layoff, I'm not going to fault him too much for a high strikeout rate in his first taste of high A.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it like. I never really ding guys for when they move around like that a lot, because that's also like a lot of life stuff happening to these guys at the same time.
That's a very fair point, especially moving. I mean, I wonder. So we should actually look into this down the line if. Having a more let's phrase it this way, a more important term in terms of development stationed in Brooklyn is a benefit or not long term. Like, I don't know if the culture shock of landing in the city and also making a fairly significant jump in opposition talent affects guys some way, but we'll have to see over the long haul. But I mean, Brooklyn used to be not as important as a developmental team.
It's a big deal. Like, the Mets made it to be a big deal. Like, it's one of their bigger deal places now, which is cool for me because I'm very close to it. But also, like, you're right. I always found it odd when people were like, oh, well, he struggled when he moves up. It's like, yeah, well, yeah, he moved from Florida to Brooklyn in the middle of a season with not a lot of money, talking about the money stuff from before, and like meeting a whole new team. Like, that's a lot of So that's a lot of like life shock. And then, oh, you have to play baseball now, you know,
against like, the best competition you've ever seen.
Yeah. And on top of that, it's hard for dudes when you're there the whole year because you're facing the best competition you've ever seen if you moved up. So I'll give him a pass for that. He was good in St. Lucie. So,
yeah, I'm trying to do this quickly in my head. He's got a decent chance to make the top 10 again because the system is so weak. Yeah,
he does.
And that's definite. Let's put it this way. That's more a reflection of the quality of the system than his status as a burgeoning top prospect. But he is interesting.
Yeah, that's the whole top 25 stuff we were talking about recently, that like they're not all created equal.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Going through the rest of the first team, we've talked about Beatty, Mauricio Cortez. We had a fairly long discussion about Khalil Lee last week or the week before. I really like Khalil Lee. Still not penciling him in to start in the outfield next year. We've also talked about Jake Mangum a lot. But I think having a more definitive discussion here would be interesting. What do we think his future actually is? Is he just a bench guy, or does he actually have a chance to be a Adam Eaton-esque contributor, albeit one with better opinions? For those of you who don't know, Jake Mangum, very famously on his way out the door at Mississippi State.
Yes.
Someone help. Yeah, thank you. I knew it was one of those schools.
Yes.
Said that. He made some very strong and correct comments about paying college athletes. So I assume he'd also very much be in favor of better minor league pay.
Yeah, it was honestly when I know the type of player he was when they drafted him. And then I saw that, I was like, I don't even care. Cool. Get him in the system.
Yep.
I don't know. I think he's probably like a fourth outfielder type, maybe like Albert Almora. But that could be like usable. Like that's a guy you need sometimes. Maybe a little bit better of a hitter, but he doesn't have a lot of pop even now. Like even his
most talking about, he hit 7 home runs this year.
And that's literally like a career high since like high school. Like just doesn't have the power to do that, which is fine. It's not his fault, but that also caps your ability to be a major league player unless you're like literally the best outfielder of all time. And he's a good one. He's a good outfielder. So
I would like to see him run a little bit more.
Yeah, I think he could.
Given that that's kind of the profile he's trending towards, like, give me that strong Genesui Fargas energy, you know? And he has a fairly high success rate on his steal. He hit exactly 70% this year, so not super high.
But that's, like, something you could build off of.
Yeah.
I mean, it's also the minors where, like, it's never been easier to steal bases than ever before.
That's true.
What did they have any base stealing related rules at AA this year? I don't remember what.
I'm not sure if they reached up to AA, but like Francisco Alvarez was stealing bases at Brooklyn fairly regularly.
Yes, like, of course.
Oh, it was incredible. Some of the things that I had to write on my recaps, it would be like Alvarez hit a home run and had 2 steals, and I'm like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. I'm going back to watch the game. I'm like, oh, he was just standing. Like he just got there like easy too with those rules.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also just become a skill that's less emphasized in the age of catcher framing, right? Like, maybe 10, 15 years ago, if you were just getting run on at will, you weren't a catcher. Nowadays, if you're a good receiver, who the hell cares?
And no one runs anyway in the majors.
Exactly.
So, like, it's a both sides issue. Like, I'm shocked a team that, like, the Rays even, or, like, the A's just don't kind of, like, try to exploit that and run more because teams don't do it.
That's an interesting point. And maybe it's just because the margins are so thin.
Yeah. Be curious to see.
And of course we might see this swing back the other way long term if catcher framing becomes a thing of the past with automated balls and strikes.
Yeah, I wonder what type of defenders you're gonna get back there. Like if we get robo umps and you don't have to frame anything. Like, are you just going to put, like, your worst defender back there to just, like, smother the baseball?
Nelson Cruz catching.
Yeah. Maybe not that far, but.
Can you catch?
Can you literally catch a baseball? Okay. Get back there, kid.
Well, on that note, actually, I listened to the PFF podcast to fill time while walking the dog. And one of the hosts is a former minor league player. For charity, they were gonna he was gonna throw pitches to his co-host. Like they got you're right. He was and the co-host was supposed to hit them, right? And they knew he wasn't getting any hits, but then as a stretch goalie, they're like, well, you should get behind the plate and catch.
And catch,
and the pitcher was immediately like, no, I will hurt you.
Yeah.
You will not be able to catch even me soft tossing to you.
Yeah.
Catching's hard.
The hardest I ever caught was a kid who threw mid-80s, and I was like, this is insane.
I'm going to die.
And you have to be back there framing it, too. I don't know how you do it. Like, I don't understand how someone's framing a Jacob deGrom fastball on there. I would miss, trying to, move my hand there in time. It's insane.
I mean, forget the Jacob deGrom fastball. How about, the Emmanuel Clase 102-mile-hour cutter?
Or Gratterall and his, sinker.
No thanks. Well, I'm going to use this as an excuse to segue to the pitching side. So the final member of our first team that we should talk about a bit is Eric Orsi. In a system that's really bereft of interesting relief talent, he's one of the few names that's mm-hmm. stood out this year. Performed pretty well, even in AAA. I was surprised he didn't get a look down the stretch. As I cannot spell his name to pull up his Fangraphs page. Come on. Great content. Struck out almost 12 per 9 in AAA. He did walk a bunch, but ran a 2.19 ERA, a 3.52 FIP. His AA and even high A numbers were Valines-esque.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm a big fan at this point.
He's going to get run next year. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Maybe he probably doesn't break camp with the Mets, but he's going to be one of the guys they call up.
He'll be in the churn fairly early.
Yeah. And hopefully he sticks and just stays up. But the Mets need so many more optionable bullpen arms. They just the bullpen gets so stagnant because they can't demote guys because it's all Familias and guys like that who are you can't waive them, you know?
Yeah. You look at the best teams. The Rays are obviously a special case with how they treat their pitching staffs, but the Dodgers, the Giants, I don't actually know about the Red Sox as much, but most of these top teams are built off a couple stalwarts at the back end, but then a bunch of guys that they rotate in and out.
The White Sox, when they're paying Liam Hendricks, which was, he's very good.
And but traded also, Nick Madrigal for Craig.
Well, that was a different story.
Was insane.
Who was horrible too. Kimbrel was bad. But I mean it when you have those stalwart guys, you build around them with guys who you could bring up and down and move around and really because you really need way more than the bullpen that allows you every game. You need more than those guys. You need guys to pitch for a month in July. You know, it's just you're going to need guys like that. And the Mets desperately need them. They don't have really any of them.
No, they have basically none. And I think too often, and this is a good comment as we enter AAOP season, we'll see or even make our own plans that pencil a couple of these guys, or not pencil, but pen a couple of these guys into the Major League bullpen. And you don't want that, right? You want four or five guys who are locks in the bullpen, but you want a group of 8 to 10 guys behind that where on any given day you're okay with, I don't know, 5 or 6 of those 10 guys pitching a 7th inning for you.
Yeah. Building the bullpen through free agency it's okay, but also if Familia's bad next year and they give him a 1-year deal, that's it. He's just there.
Yep.
He's there or you cut him. You can't do anything about it. You can't cycle him. You can't, if you need an extra arm for another doubleheader, you can't send him down for a day. You get stuck, and that's how you end up with a tired bullpen that gets gassed, and they get hurt or they get run down, and then that's a different problem altogether.
It's also just not possible to sign 10 guys.
Exactly.
Unless
you're signing really bad players, and then it doesn't matter.
You can always sign 10 bad pitchers and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. They'll sign here, but then it doesn't matter that you have them. So
that's our first team. Which, ironically, I think if you stack this first team up against most other farm systems' first teams, it'd be very good. And then it falls off a fucking cliff just because that's what the benchmark system is.
And has been for years, too.
Yeah. We've talked about Sanger a good bit. Interesting backup catcher type, pop defense. I think we talked about him because he was an all-star as well last week. Does anyone want to talk about David Thompson?
No, I don't.
It's like you take one of these guys, one of these types, like every year, and you hope one of them turns out to be Alonzo in like a decade.
Yeah.
David Thompson was one of them who turned out not to be.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty much all.
That's a very like good synopsis.
You know, a coin flip chance he plays in the big leagues at some point. I don't know.
I mean, we've talked about a lot about how we even enjoy a little bit that top heavy draft strategy. And we don't need to touch on the rocker issue again here, but if your draft strategy is top heavy and you want to snag an interesting college cornerback with one of those underslot picks. Yeah, it's a good roll the dice.
But also, that's how you get a thin system. And, like, that's how you get, like, when you not to touch on the rocker thing, but the system would have been way better if it was rocker and all these dudes, but now it's just all these dudes and none of them are even on this in this remote area. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, they just had an entire draft, and, like, Beatty would have made this team last year, like, out of his draft year, we would have put him on the second one and been like the future, but none of those guys are here. So
one of them is,
oh yeah, huh? You're right. One of them is, but still that's one out of an entire draft.
Yeah.
That's like 20 deep. I think it was like, come on.
Yeah. Not great. Not great. So yeah, David Thompson. Fine. Luke Ritter fell off towards the end of the year.
He hit so many home runs.
Yeah. Early in the season, he was absolutely dominating Brooklyn. And then he really fell off pretty hard. I don't think he even finished as the leader in home runs because he got injured.
Yeah.
I mean, good for him. Glad he had a good season. Hope he had fun hanging out in Brooklyn. He's a 24-year-old in high A.
Yeah. There's a reason why he hit those home runs, but good for him. Yeah.
Third base, Jalen Palmer. I want to believe so bad.
I always will believe. I know.
Where are we all at on Jalen Palmer? Let me give you the stat line. There are 40 games in high A. He hit 189, 314, 336. Walked 15% of the time. Struck out 38.5% of the time. 4 homers and 7 steals.
The only thing I have to say is he's better than Sherbin Newton, I think.
He is
better than the previous version of this profile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. I saw him once and he just beat the ball into the ground like 3 times.
The swing isn't great.
And I was like, come on, damn. Like, he's a bigger dude than you would think. Just hit the ball in the air. Like, this is the Beatty issue. Like, Beatty does hit the ball in the air even though he has a ground ball rate, you know? Like, the other side of it's there for Beatty and the other side of it wasn't really there for him this year. So he has time to figure it out, I think, but and he's going to be in our top 25. But
it feels like his. I mean, I've been honest with people on this pod before. Like, everyone else here has a much better scouting eye than I do, and I've been trying to learn more about this. And even with my relatively brief history of evaluating swings, his just looks like he's intentionally shortening up, limiting himself so that he can try to make contact, and as a result is hitting everything into the ground and also still isn't making contact.
He strikes out a lot, and like I see the mold of clay there with him, and he's a good defender, I think. Like, I like his defense, so like I see why you would get excited about him, but also I'm a little, of course I'm concerned because he didn't hit this year, but you would like to see him hit. I just think I maybe he has to change his swing and just go all out and just approach it differently next year, but it can't be really worse.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't Cody Bellinger changing a swing after winning an MVP award, you know? Like, this is a guy hitting, like, in the hundreds. You could change your swing and figure it out.
Like, the dude's got huge, long levers, and I don't think the bat speed's bad. Just open it up, and maybe you're still striking out 30% of the time, but you're also probably doubling your home run rate.
Yeah, hitting the ball with more authority at all.
Now, he has been almost exclusively an outfielder since moving to Brooklyn. That might have just been due to some positional log jams. I don't know.
They needed more outfielders than infielders.
Mm-hmm.
They
Mauricio was at short.
Peroza was at third.
And Sec, he played some second too, but he mostly played third at Brooklyn, I think. They had guys to play the infield. They just did not really have an outfield. But that's like the Mets system, really. Yep. I feel like everyone they have is an infielder. So that also helps, I think, that helps Palmer's, future development, too. He has more of a chance to rise through the ranks of the Mets system as an outfielder than an infielder and get shots at the major league level. This is in the future now, but it's still so thin. Khalil Lee is the only hope in the outfield right now.
I'm sure Steve would hit us with an Obi-Wan quote or a Princess Leia quote right here,
Mm-hmm.
So our last infielder here is the lone 2021 draft pick to appear on this list, that being Kevin Kendall.
He was ridiculous, right?
Yeah, so Kevin Kendall was their seventh round pick this past year after an impressive showing at UCLA in college. He had 355, 409, 496 as their leadoff hitter. Played a good enough shortstop that they moved Matt McClain around the infield or to the outfield, wherever Matt McClain played this past year. He seeded his spot.
Everywhere.
Right. Excuse me. I have that backwards. He moved off short for Matt McClain because Matt McClain was the better prospect. That also makes more sense.
That tracks, yeah.
I was like, wait, that doesn't make very much sense at all. Good defender up the middle, not a huge amount of power. But an underslot, interesting guy, and they sent him to St. Lucie. He is very clearly too good for St. Lucie. Hit 327, 421, 451, 11% walk rate, 18% strikeout rate. Only one homer, which tracks, eight steals.
Eight steals is nice in a short amount of time.
Potential little utility infielder. I would like to see him face some appropriate competition.
And he will next year. So we're going to find out pretty much as soon as next year starts in the minors what he's about. But, I mean, you can't really debut much better than that. That puts you right on the – every day, I feel like every time I wrote about the Mets minor league system, it was him going, 2-for-4.
Mm-hmm.
I think he led off for them a lot, too. And he was just, constantly getting on base for them. And it was one of those – he helped the lineup a lot. And that's always fun. And even if he's a utility guy, you need guys like that.
Yeah, much like the back of the bullpen, having a bench that's optionable is great. And, we'll find out a lot about Kendall. This sample isn't particularly meaningful. It's better that he was good than he was bad. But we'll see how he performs. I assume next year he'll start at Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, right? He'd have to.
Yeah, that's the only plus spot I could see making. Assuming unless they stick Mauricio back there to start.
I don't think they will.
Probably send him to Binghamton or trade him,
I mean, maybe.
So moving on to the outfield, we have one actual prospect and then two dudes that needed because we need a full outfield. The actual prospect is Alex Ramirez, DSL signing. Looked overmatched when they pushed him up to. He looked overmatched at times, let's put it that way. But his line on the season isn't even that bad for an 18-year-old in full season ball. 258, 326, 384 at St. Lucie. That's a 96 weighted. Struck out 30% of the time, just over. Five homers and 16 steals in 334 plate appearances. Look, it's not an elite breakout performance, but as an 18-year-old who's getting your first stateside, pretty good.
Again, factoring in life stuff, too.
Yeah.
18-year-old kid in a new country and doesn't know the language, and you have to play the hardest sport in the world. Day in and day out. That's a lot. And he was solid, solid enough to be an average player, which is, that's just, you hope he grows from there and is more comfortable next year and just the breakout comes. But he's definitely a circle name and look at for next year type guy.
Yeah, this is the kind of profile that, the physical traits are there. He's 6'3", 170, right?
He's gets
a little muscles growth spurt and puts on 30 pounds or something. This could be a profile that blows up. It's also a profile that could disappear in 2 seconds. So
just like every DSL kid ever.
Yeah, basically.
But he's so young.
Not on a good track. Let's put it that way.
It's a good start, even if 96 weighted isn't impressive off the page.
He's not doing a Francisco.
The dream lives for another year.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He's not doing a Francisco Alvarez things in
Yeah. And that's why Francisco Alvarez is top 20 whatever prospect in the entire game.
7-8 prospect. Yeah, BP is going to have him very, very high. Yes,
and they should.
Yeah. So now the other two warm bodies in the outfield, Mason Williams and Mark Payton. I already forgot his first name. I'm pretty sure it's Mark. Mason Williams at least had a fun major league moment for the Mets this year. He had like that big double against someone or other. I don't remember who.
I think he did something against Baltimore.
That sounds right, and also was a fitting level of competition for him to excel against. Sorry, Allison. So Williams was a minor league signing because they were desperate for bodies in the AAA outfield. Hit decently in AAA, 281, 336, 414. That's basically a league average bat. Look, I don't want to talk too much about Mason Williams. He's a non-prospect.
He played 17 games for the Mets, and it felt like 40.
Jeez, he played that many? How did we get that much Mason Williams and so little Jhenashwy Fargis?
He got hurt and they DFA'd him.
Why did they DFA Fargis? I could have put Fargis on this list instead.
They massacred my boy.
Well, look what they did to my boy. So yeah, that's Mason Williams. And the other guy is Mark Payton, who's only a year younger at 29. But he actually performed extremely well in AAA. He had 305, 385, 477. That's a 131 weighted. He had four homers, two steals in 40 games. Good strikeout to walk ratio. That's a significantly better performance than he put up for the Reds this year at the same level. The Mets acquired him in August for cash considerations when they were even in more desperate need of outfielders at AAA. Got nothing, you know. Ironically, he's another former Yankee, just like Mason Williams, but you know, not a long-term fixture.
No, he's probably a quad A player, but hey, good for him. He was very good this year.
Mm-hmm. Hope he got a performance bonus or something. I don't know.
He got himself another job somewhere in professional baseball.
He probably might get another job with the Mets.
Cause honestly, I wouldn't even be mad because they need guys to play the outfield in Syracuse.
Bring back Fargis first.
Cubs legend.
Yes. So finally, on to the pitching. We've talked a lot about JT Ginn, I think. I know we at times have found him underwhelming, at times have found it encouraging. I didn't actually get to see him this year. I think you did, Ken, at some point.
Not live, but some video. You know. Pretty good sinker. You wish there was a little more on it. Good slider. Doesn't command it particularly well, but all of it's kind of meaningless given that it's his first year back from injury.
Mm-hmm.
And also his pro debut. So, yep.
Probably the thinking. Do we have him ahead of or behind Allen in the system right now?
Oh, behind.
Behind, I think.
Even with Allen's injury.
I agree.
We'll be playing this game all year. But yeah, I think behind.
It's just, I think Allen's ceiling is like, it's not that I don't think Ginn is good, like, and I don't think he's a future major leaguer. I think he will be. I just see more of like a mid to back end guy for Ginn, like closer to David Peterson, like maybe a little better.
Yeah, but Allen has much better stuff going into surgery.
Like, Allen was, like, a relief ace for Brooklyn, like, immediately out of high school. Like, in their Penn League.
Oh, Allen's curveball is better than anything Ginn has ever thrown.
I think it might be the best pitch in the system. Like, yes. Allen's curveball. Like, and if he comes back from surgery fine, then he's just going to be... He has more top-of-the-rotation potential than Ginn, and Ginn just, I don't think, gets that. But also, Ginn could do that if he looks like he did it. Mississippi State, right? Mississippi State. If he comes back a year stronger from Tommy John, like, that could come back.
I don't disagree with either of you. I would have Allen decidedly above.
Yes. Yep. I think even both of them healthy, Allen's better. Like, he's just a better prospect. And that doesn't mean, that's not saying Ginn is a bad one.
Oh, if they were both healthy, Allen, no question.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
With Allen still hurt, I think there might be an argument for Ginn since he's gotten back on the field, but I still would prefer Allen.
Mm-hmm, me too.
And it'll be, I mean, like Ken said, difficult to take too much from this year since he looked middling is too harsh, but he didn't blow us away. Just important he stayed healthy, and we'll see how he looks next year.
The stuff looked like a guy coming back from Tommy John.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Much like Syndergaard in this year, if we're going to talk about major league stuff.
Well, at least Ginn was allowed to throw breaking balls.
And didn't pitch at the major league level about it for some reason. But
God, the Mets. And now finally, after alluding to this, I don't know, 40 minutes ago or so, we get to Brian Metoyer.
Yes.
Metoyer, who might be third or fourth best relief pitching prospect in the system at this point, and that's not a great sign.
Very what the problems are with the Mets organizationally right now is that, but I like him. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a fan of his, and I want them to put him on the, the 40, even though like maybe there's other people that they could do that. I think the back of the 40 is bad enough that he should be on it. And
yep.
It's going to annoy me when he's not, because I'm pretty sure, like, if I had to guess right now, they wouldn't.
And oh, the Rays are going to take him and turn him into, like, a useful reliever immediately.
I'm going to be so mad when another team does it, because I know it's there. Like, I don't know if it's irrational or not, but I really believe that there's something there with him.
Tom is going to mauled when this happens.
He's going to be one of the dudes, and I'm just going to be like, why? And it's going to be like, it's literally Brian Metoyer. I'm gonna be like, I don't care. This could have been here. He could have been a useful sixth inning man.
Yes. I mean, I don't disagree, honestly. Real quick, his stat line in Brooklyn this year, 33 innings pitched, 2.18 ERA, 12.5 strikeouts per nine, 4-ish walks per nine, had a brief cameo in Binghamton. Probably a guy that should have gotten promoted earlier than he did. Do we think? I mean, that's probably.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like they were a little late on him.
Mm-hmm. He's a fastball curve dude, right? I recall correctly. Or does he throw a slider? I might be wrong. Or does he just see the bump with the slurve? These guys all just blend together after a while, unfortunately.
There is a breaking ball.
Hmm?
There is a breaking ball.
A breaking ball, yes.
Can confirm.
Like most fastball breaking ball relievers, he has a breaking ball.
But not all of them, as we are aware.
So he's 24, still a realist prospect. He was Rule 5 eligible this past season and went unselected, which wasn't entirely surprising. He hadn't pitched above low A. This year, I think there's a fairly real chance someone would take him and try to hide him and the Met. But it's also difficult to imagine an organization more pitching desperate than the Mets.
Metoyer is also a spin rate boy. Like, he's one of those guys with his breaking. So,
yeah, you can quite easily imagine the nerds pulling up a query of Rule 5 picks and going to their GM saying, yeah, take this guy.
Especially if you're bad, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know why bad teams don't do that more. Just like kind of take interesting dudes, and if you return them, it doesn't really matter. Like,
I mean, I quite liked what the Pirates did this past Rule 5 draft.
Yeah, they did that, right?
They got Soriano, the injured guy, so we'll see him next year, and then the guy they traded for with the Mets, whose name I've already forgotten, Oviedo.
Oh, yeah.
Who would have been a very interesting pitcher in the Mets system.
But yeah.
Sandy doesn't make Rule 5 picks, except for Brad Emus, however you pronounce his name.
I forgot about that. He naps through the Rule 5. He's just right asleep.
He's not asleep. He's waiting for a team to call and offer cash.
That's true. That's honestly true.
To go look up this name now because it's going to bother me. Fangraphs 2021 Rule 5 draft. Come on. Yep, I gave up. So yeah, those are our first and second all-organization teams. That is the last bit of content we have prepped for today, so I'll move on to the Wilponery of the Week. Anyone have some Wilponery of the Week? I have one if no one else does.
I do not.
The obvious one for this week is the whole John Gruden mess.
I'm shocked that didn't happen to the Wolf on system. That they're like, they definitely said some crazy stuff.
Those emails definitely exist.
Yeah, they definitely did.
It's not even in the freaking emails. They fired someone for being a single mother.
Well, yeah. Literally. Got away with it.
If not for you meddling journalists. For those of you who don't know, John Gruden's a piece of shit. Many emails demonstrating as such were leaked, fittingly enough, as part of the investigation around the Washington football team. And he was summarily fired in very short order, which is just a very Wilponian series of events.
Yeah. And it's like literally emails that are like very easily obtained legally to like look into.
Without like
from his work email too. Like from his work email. Mm-hmm. Like at when he was at ESPN or whatever.
Without glossing over the seriousness of this issue, and it's horrible that the many players of color and the one openly homosexual player that he's currently coaching had to deal with this situation, like things they should never have had to deal with. But it was impressive how he ticked every possible box of being a shit person.
Yeah.
He got the racist box, the homophobia box.
He hates everyone.
It was like, wow, dude. I don't understand these sorts of people. It truly just it boggles the mind, as it should. It should be beyond explanation, honestly.
Yeah,
it's before just, anyone pulls up the, it was 10 years ago. The dude was what, 50 or whatever at the time?
He's like 48. Okay, he should know that. That's who he is. Like when you're saying that stuff in your 40s, but like. It's just, it somehow isn't surprising, and also was like, damn, like reading it was wild. Like there was a lot of rough ones, and his like apologies were really bad, and like as they always are. And then he stepped down, and the Raiders were like, okay, he's gone now, and that's it. And then right after, like literally today or yesterday, the NFL was like, yeah, there was nothing else in them in the emails. That was it.
Uh huh.
Yeah, and everyone was like, okay, I'm sure that he was the only person you found stuff on.
Tomorrow they're going to announce they've got a bridge to sell us.
Yeah, right.
Brief aside to mention that his son remains employed by the Raiders, and his son's name is Deuce. And not a nickname. His name is Deuce.
And he is a weightlifter, I believe. He's like
5'6" strength and conditioning coach.
And he kind of looks like him, too. So, like,
yeah,
there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, a lot to unpack that we are not equipped to do. And we're also at our usual hour time point, so probably time to wrap things up. So thanks to everyone for listening. I'm going to mess up this outro because it's not Steve. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. I also encourage you to follow us on Twitter. Steve is at Steve Saipa. I am at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. There's the butchering. And yeah. Thomas is at Sad Met Season. Thomas, when are you going to get a grown-up handle?
Never.
When the Mets don't make you sad anymore?
Oh, well, they always will.
So, never. Great. Perfect. Yeah,
never. Because they had the potential to make me not sad. And then they had this season that they had, which was one of the sadder in recent memories somehow.
That sounds about right. We encourage you to rate and review the podcast. And until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.